BBC News with Sue Montgomery. Security has not yet improved in the Haitian capital Port-au-Prince following the resignation of the unpopular, unelected Prime Minister Ariel Henry. Some of the criminal gangs that control most of the city had demanded he quit, but they've continued to blockade the capital. It remains impossible to deliver essential goods to Port-au-Prince. Matt Knight manages a staff of more than 70 aid workers there.
It's too dangerous for us to be able to send those staff into the areas where we normally deliver aid because of the violence. We had around 300,000 internally displaced people. There's probably been another 25,000 in the last 2 weeks moved out of areas into schools, hospitals and camps.
The US special counsel, who released a scathing report last month, has said he stands by his characterization of President Biden's memory as poor. Giving evidence to a congressional hearing, Robert Hur said Mr. Biden appeared to have no memory of how classified documents came to be at his house. Here's Nome Iqbal.
Special Prosecutor Robert Hur finds himself a rare unifier. Republicans and Democrats are angry with him. Republicans for not charging Mr. Biden and Democrats for making the president's age a focus. They've accused Mr. Hur, who has said he's a registered Republican, of trying to get Donald Trump re-elected, which he denied in the hearing today. Republicans are looking for evidence that Mr. Hur was under political pressure to not charge Mr. Biden. He has stood firm, saying his investigation was impartial, independent, and thorough. He said he could not determine whether Mr. Biden had willfully retained and disclosed sensitive documents without addressing the president's state of mind.
Pro-Ukrainian fighters say they still hold Russian villages after a series of cross-border incursions. But Moscow says their attacks were repulsed after hours of fighting. Neither claim can be verified. James Waterhouse reports.
It's not the first time these armed groups, made up of Russian nationals based in Ukraine, have posted a video claiming to have launched attacks on Russian territory. This time they said they were going to, in their words, take back their land from the regime centimetre by centimetre, ahead of the presidential elections in Russia later this week. What isn't clear is how far they got and what damage they have caused. Russia's FSB security service says it stopped the crossing, with its state media reporting that Russian forces had killed 100 fighters over the past few days and destroyed several armoured vehicles.
The head of the CIA has reiterated his calls for members of the US Congress to approve further military assistance for Ukraine. William Burns warned it was urgently needed to help Kyiv regain the initiative in its battle with invading Russian forces. BBC News. Iraq's agricultural ministry says half of the country's arable farmland has now been abandoned due to an ongoing drought. Last year, the Prime Minister warned that climate change was affecting more than 7 million Iraqis, with rainfall at its lowest level for 40 years. The UN has ranked Iraq as one of the countries worst affected by climate change. Hungary's government has summoned the US ambassador to protest over recent remarks by President Biden about the country's conservative Prime Minister Viktor Orban. Mr. Biden accused Mr. Orban of being a leader who doesn't think democracy works and was looking for a dictatorship. Mr. Biden's comments came in response to a meeting between the Hungarian leader and his long-term ally Donald Trump during a recent visit to the US. A cargo ship in the Indian Ocean has been boarded by suspected Somali pirates around 600 nautical miles off the country's coast. A maritime security firm said 20 armed men had attacked the vessel, which was heading from Mozambique to the United Arab Emirates. China's largest producer of bottled water, Nongfu Spring, has come under attack for not being patriotic enough. The company is owned by China's richest person, Zheng Shangsheng. Here's our Asia-Pacific regional editor, Mickey Bristow.
The campaign against Nongfu began after the death of the owner of a rival bottled water firm. He was widely praised for his patriotism. Since then, Nongfu has been criticised for having packaging that apparently looks too Japanese. Others have reacted angrily to a suggestion that the owner's son is a US citizen. Nongfu's shares have fallen and some consumers are boycotting its products. The episode shows the power of nationalist sentiment in China and how quickly it can damage a company's fortunes.
BBC News.
Both six above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take it to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from under.
Good afternoon and welcome to this edition of A Public Affair. I'm your host for the hour, Jade Iseri Ramos, filling in for Ali Muldrow. Before we get started, I just want to thank everyone who made a donation during our winter pledge drive. The gifts are still available online if you want to make a donation to the station. This week and last, students in Dane County will, or have already, competed in the African American History Academic Challenge. It is a national competition created and held by the organization 100 Black Men. The aim of this educational and scholarship program is to enhance the study of African American history across the country and in our community. Joining me today is President of the Madison Chapter of 100 Black Men, Dr. Floyd Rose, and Mr. Corby Wright, who is a board member and chair of the Health and Wellness Committee. I want to thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Let's start with you, Dr. Rose. What got you involved in 100 Black Men? And if you can help me understand the background of the national organization.
Well, my involvement was predicated off of their history of working within the community and the different applications and actions that they took on behalf of those most in need. The 100 Black Men of Madison is an affiliate of the 100 Black Men of America, one of the 101 affiliates in the United States. And we have now a couple in foreign countries, such as we have 100 Black Men of London.
Oh, wow.
So it's grown since my involvement, but the activities are pretty much the same and very effective, in my opinion, and one that brings value to anyone's time who is involved, either as a member or a volunteer.
What do some of those activities look like?
Well, as Corby will explain, there are four facets. One of those would be education. One of those would be mentoring. One of those would be health and wellness that Corby is involved in. And all of those pretty much dictate activities and responsibilities that are put forth. The fourth one is economic development, of which we feel that they're all intertwined, so that what we do can have different tentacles, but it gets back to the stabilization of the community and specifically of those most in need.
Mm. Corby, Dr. Rose sort of set you up there, but how did you get involved and what is your, where is your involvement specifically directed?
Sure. So my 9-to-5, I'm the health program manager for the state of Wisconsin. And back in 2020, when COVID changed the way we do everything, I noticed a need in the community of people who look like us. And the need was education regarding the vaccine itself, education regarding health risk factors that predominantly affect African Americans. And so I wanted to get involved with an organization that had, like Dr. Rose said, has many tentacles, but the one I noticed the need where I could help the organization advance even forward, more forward than it already is health and wellness. Mm-hmm. So during that time, I began to basically put together videos, TikToks, anything I could that Dr. Rose wanted me to get the message out about how important it was to monitor our healthcare during a pandemic.
Yeah, how do you think that that coming from you and coming from 100 Black Men is different than maybe like, you know, the Dane County Department of Health saying, you know, maybe the same things, but in a coming from different people.
Sure. You want me to go ahead?
Well, I will, let me just do what I normally do is just say something and I'll let somebody else give you the facts on it. But the one thing that COVID did, and somebody might argue against this, but we rarely have run into any African-American that did not know someone who was an African-American that died during COVID. Mm-hmm. The mortality was unprecedented for African-American people in to say in this day and age. And so the messages that Corby could put forth because of his background and his connections and his knowledge and his desire to help others were so fruitful, because irrespective of a lot of the noise in my lifetime, and I think many, I've never seen a disease politicized like this. This was really unbelievable, because the difference was people really could die from right away from misinformation. And Corby took out on a mission that was just unprecedented on getting the facts and the truth out.
Yeah, Corby, you wanna tack on to that?
Yes, and Dr. Rose hit the nail on the head. In 2020 alone, within July and August, that's only 2 months, I lost 6 relatives.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
To COVID. You know, now they had pre-existing conditions, but, you know, COVID enhanced the outcome. And so that's where my passion came from, that our community needed to be educated by someone who's part of the community. Because as we know, there's a lot of distrust for the medical profession, rightfully so, due to historical events that had taken place involving our people. And so that's where that passion came from. And I think what I do differently is I'm very much out in the community.
Yeah.
You know, I'm there with the people, handing out brochures, talking about what's going on, setting up vaccination clinics, that type of deal.
Yeah, we brought you here to talk specifically about the education angle, but since we got deep into the health and wellness, is there anything else that are those sort of tentacles that are out that we should touch on before we talk about the education aspect? Maybe the economic or the, yeah.
Right now, Corby is doing research on taking a look at health factors for members of our community. And the overview and research is not concluded at this point, but we are finding, or I should allow him to speak, he has shared with us that many things that are often given as causations might not be, in fact, the real crux of the problem. Corby, would you like to legitimate some of the things I just said?
Absolutely, Dr. Rose. COVID exacerbated issues that had already been there, and it exposed and amplified them.
What are some of those?
I think one of those major issues is our mental health in our community. Knowing that people who look like us only make up less than 2% of the providers who address mental health, that's a huge issue, because a lot of people don't feel comfortable talking about themselves or their issues with someone who can't identify with them, who doesn't look like them. So I think one of the things the pandemic has really done is expose the need for mental health providers who look like the communities that they serve.
Yeah, there's so much education. If you're meeting a provider who doesn't understand the cultural like world that you're coming from, you have to educate them, right? And that's a lot of work to put on you,
right,
as the person who's paying the provider.
Exactly.
Yeah. Is there, so mental health, is there anything else that's been exacerbated that you've seen through your work with post-pandemic, in quotes?
Absolutely. I think socialization of our kids, I think that's somewhat led to the literacy issues that we're seeing in our districts, especially here in Dane County, where a lot of us were finding aren't reading at a third grade level, who are above and beyond the third grade level, when we know or may know studies show that kids who don't read at a third grade level by the time they reach the third grade tend to fall by the wayside after that. They don't improve after that. I think one of the major things the pandemic has done is expose the need for literacy.
Mm. And if I could just interject that what really occurs is after third grade, not always, but most of the time, third grade is that plateau where from that point forward, you read to learn. Mm. So if you cannot read to advance, you possibly will take a divergent course as a non-reader. Yes. And the ramifications of that are brutal and really, really bad.
Mm-hmm. What can we do? I know that's not really what this show's about, but I feel like that's a really hard thing to reckon with, that by third grade we are setting our kids up for a lifetime of, or by third grade we need to be setting our kids up for a lifetime of learning, and if mm-hmm. we're not doing that, what are we setting them up for?
Yes.
I believe that we need to use a poor phrase, but double down on prior to third mm-hmm. grade mm-hmm. and really put forth that energy when it could really, really, really set the course for success or not success. And I know that some people will say, well, everybody doesn't need to go to college. We're not saying that. We're just saying that a disability is you cannot read irrespective of what your life course will be. Mm-hmm. And that is essential, and that whatever it takes to make sure that comes to fruition is energy well spent, money well spent, and also one where you can have a positive conscience that you did your very, very best to equip this child to deal with yes. what will come in the future.
Right, right. We're not saying that if you are an adult who struggles with reading that there's anything wrong with you, but the children in your life should be able to be equipped to have that head start.
That's a good point. This is not about shaming anyone.
Yeah. Right.
This is about equipping everyone with those things that are sustainable and so that every person has a fighting chance, irrespective of background, race, mm-hmm. anything. Everybody, you know, in this day and age, a digital day and age, you should have the equipment to be able to go forward and not be encumbered by a disability that maybe could have been prevented.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're just tuning in, my guests today are Dr. Floyd Rose and Mr. Corby White, who are from the Madison chapter of 100 Black Men. And we are specifically here to talk about the African American History Academic Challenge, which we got far away from, but we're gonna get right back there. If you would like to join us, and if you have any questions for my guests or want to chime in with your own experiences, the phone over here is 608-256-2001. So, Dr. Rose, tell me about the African American History Academic Challenge.
The 100 Black Men of Madison next year will be in operation for 30 years. Mm. For 27 of those years, we have had the African American History Academic Challenge. And it was initiated for a number of various reasons. But one was that of providing information to all about the depth and breadth of the history of African Americans in the context of daily life.
Mm-hmm.
And to provide at least some information about what really was tantamount to an entire group of people who did not at that time, and it could be argued at this point, have a context of their contributions, both realized by themselves and others. And this was inserted by those who were unbelievably brilliant to not just put this within the context of, well, we need to do this, we need to do that. It was self-actualization to some degree to say, let's bring younger people in and let's create a contest.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the front runner of this would be history as a consideration, but the real deal was also academic.
Mm.
Where, why not have something where individuals are cheering for students who have read and are come up with the right answer for something? If we can cheer for somebody dunking a basketball,
mm-hmm.
if we can cheer for somebody catching a pass, why can't we cheer and really provide some glorification of somebody academically getting the right answer?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really an amazing matrix, but at the end of the day, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. I want to talk about that pretty coolness in a minute, but one thing that struck me is you said it's been 27 years
yes.
since the beginning. You're talking about a very different history class, right? 27 years ago. Was there a lot of pushback, what was happening 27 years ago in the history class, and why was this so important? It's important now, but why was it especially important at the start?
I was not there 27 years ago, but I would say that there were things that were in place, but there was no recognition.
Mm.
And I will let Corby speak about this, but the African American History Month that we just went through, it didn't come up in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
It came up a little bit before that. Corby?
Yes. So what Dr. Rose is referring to is the great Carter G. Woodson, who happens to be also a member of the most amazing fraternity ever invented, Omega Psi Phi Fraternity Incorporated, RU.
Can anybody hear me shaking my head? Okay. I'm sorry.
Fought long and hard. First Black History was a week mm-hmm. of recognition. And throughout the years, he fought and challenged the legislature of the United States to get it made into Black History Month that it is now. And now what we're finding is a lot of opposition, good opposition, to it only being observed for a month. Mm-hmm. That, you know, the achievements of our people are, look at the red light, you mm-hmm. look at peanut butter, things that we take for granted every day, the iron. Those are all our accomplishments contributing to American history. But what I love about the African American Academic History Challenge itself, Dr. Rose referred to it, the kids, the sense of empowerment that they have learning about history, the history of themselves mm-hmm. a lot of times, that was not necessarily taught to them in the classroom,
yeah.
that they became part of this team where they're working with a coach who's helping them learn everything in that huge book, if you can't see it, right there they're learning all of the information in there about their history. It builds that sense of confidence, empowerment, that I matter, that I'm heard, I'm acknowledged, I'm seen.
Yeah.
And seeing that through the eyes of children is incredible.
And in as a sidebar, I know that someone would envision that this would be all African-American kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's not.
Right.
It's all kinds of kids. The coaches are not just African-American. We have many that are. But they're of all races, all genders. What this is, which is so amazing to me, is something where it was made open to anyone at the very beginning,
mm-hmm.
with the idea that appreciation can come from those that look like the subject and those that don't.
Mm-hmm.
We have not only a local competition, but we have a national competition that you have to go through the local to end up at. Out of the 28 years they've been doing this nationally, we've won the national competition 7 times, and we've won it with children from all races, mm-hmm. all nationalities, all genders, all colors. It is like an amazing UN of students that we have involved in this, and coaches, and it just says so much about our community of how embracing a good idea should not be relative to certain components that we design, but allow it to be open to everyone and just see who walks in the door. And that's how this has, I think, stabilized and moved forward and sustained itself for so many, many years.
Yeah, Corby, you said something, which is that there's confidence that students who are recognizing their own history gain from learning about Black history. And, you know, you nudge towards this book, which is, I don't know, probably 3 inches thick. Like, that's a good boost up, right? And having sort of those shoulders to stand on, I think, gives a lot to students. But you're also, Dr. Rose, talking about students who aren't Black recognizing that the shoulders that they're standing on are also African Americans, and I think that is that's important for removing racism from our conversations, or for I guess entering racism into our conversations and removing it from the way that we interact.
And also, I think it's propelling. It allows history can be done so well and can be such a wonderful force to have a younger person look at this and say, I can do that, or I may want to do that. And it takes away boundaries and limits, and it provides them with opportunity to really look at themselves and just see how they can be the best of all they can be.
You know, when I was going through school, I did not like history. I thought it was boring. I thought it was just a bunch of dates and names that I had to memorize. And as I got older, I realized that I like a good story. You know, I like knowing what happened. I like knowing history. I like knowing history of a place, of a people. But what was the issue was that I was reading only history that didn't feel like it pertained to me.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like it pertained to a bunch of old dead white men, like, you know, thousands, hundreds of years ago. And I wonder if you hear that from students who are, you know, currently in school, you know, saying, oh, this is history I can get behind.
I think that they vote with their time. We don't ask those questions. We focus on the subject matter. Not that that's not something that might not come up within a class, but we just focus on the subject matter. But what seems to be wonderful is this program has grown from Madison School District to Sun Prairie to Verona to Middleton Cross Plains.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it has legs to go much further and much longer.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the nuts and bolts. And if you're just tuning in, my guests today are Dr. Floyd Ross and Corby White, who are joining me to talk about the African-American History Academic Challenge, which is going on this, started last week and it's going on this week. So what does it look like with the advisor and the students? When do we start getting into this? When do students decide, like, okay, I'm going to compete this year? What does that look like?
For those that have been involved in this some time, they start really, really early. Now, our official start date is about the first week of January. But again, for those who have been done this for some time, they jumpstart as much as they can. This year we have a new book, so everybody had to start pretty fresh at the same time. So it was January. And so they work through January through February, and we have the competition in March, the local competition at each school district. We had Sun Prairie last Friday. We have Madison today, both middle schools and high schools. We'll have Verona tomorrow, both middle schools and high schools. The Middleton Cross Plains District, they have already determined who their teams are going to be. And then we will have the regional competition at Verona on Friday. And those winners will go to our national convention during the second week of June in Atlanta, Georgia, and compete for the national award, if you will. We're looking forward to all of those benchmarks.
Wow, I really snagged you during a very busy week, huh?
Yeah. Very much so.
So you mentioned middle school and high school. Is this like an after-school program, before-school program, or is it?
We allow the coach to determine what best works for them. Some coaches will work before, middle, after. Some will work maybe two or three times with different groups or meetings, if you will. But the students, pretty much once they get the book, they really tend to move through it at their own clip. Mm-hmm. But they're very, very dutiful about doing that.
How many teams were competing in Sun Prairie, and who won? Do we know?
Well, we have a middle school team and a high school team that won here in Madison. We have this afternoon, we will have 10 middle schools that will be competing, and we'll have 3 high schools that will be competing. And it is a very intense situation, but it's really the camera is always on the students, but the camera oftentimes really misses a lot by not having the audience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because that's where it gets to be really interesting. I mean, they cheer and they're fired up. We're doing this. This is our first time really coming back to the Doyle Center Auditorium after COVID. We used to do this on Saturdays. And we would even pay for whoever had the most students, they get a pizza party. And that really kind of added to the flavor of this, if you will. The problem that we have right now is that we don't want to incur a problem for a student because of being a school night. So we it's a little bit different than it has been, but we expect still a very strong turnout of parents for all of the teams that will be participating.
Does middle school and high school happen at the same time, or are they?
No, the seniors will, excuse me, the high school will be from 3 to 5. Today was ACT test day, so school was not in place, so we could bring them in earlier. Uh-huh. And then from 5:30 to 8-ish will be the middle schools.
Man, for the kids who took an ACT and then are doing this, their brains are really going to be supercharged.
We will see. So.
What does the actual competition look like? All right, so we set it up. Is there, how many people are on each team? Where do they sit?
There are three members on each team. There are two that participate and one that's the alternate.
Okay.
And they have head-to-head competition where you will ask a question and they will buzz in if they want to answer it. And the winning answer will be reviewed by judges to determine if that is correct, and if they win that, after the 10 questions for the prelims, whomever has the most points, they will go to further competition, and those that don't have more points, they will go to the other situation. But what we try to do is incentivize this so that all students who participate in this will receive a stipend for a college savings plan.
It's a good way to incentivize.
Yeah.
Corby, have you witnessed the competition at all?
Oh, Jay, I've done more than
let me go into this.
Let me know.
Corby is the MC.
Oh, okay.
Oh yeah, okay. And if you think that he pushes his fraternity here, I want to tell you it's worth the price of admission. but yeah, he has done a wonderful job to be the MC. And he's also on the school board of Verona Area School District.
Yes.
And so he brings a certain flavor to this and legitimacy from someone that is highly respected.
Mm. Corby, can you give me a taste? Like, how? What? Give me your, you know.
Radio voice?
Yeah, give me your MC voice.
Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. You could have been anywhere in the world, but you're here with us at the, is it the 28th this year?
27th.
I thought the 28th. 27th African American History Challenge, brought to you by the 100 Black Men of Madison.
Amazing. Can, like, general community members, can they come and see, or is it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. We love that. Yeah.
So the Dole Auditorium at 3:30?
It between Doyle between 3 and 5 for the high schools, and 5:30 to approximately 8 for the middle schools.
All right. If you want to go out there and hear Corby MC it and cheer. We didn't really talk about this too much. I know Dr. Rez, you started talking about the cheering aspect, but mm-hmm. What is the energy in the room, and do you hear from, you know, parents who are especially excited that we're celebrating academic success?
Absolutely. They're very mannerable. They're not there to, and you know, make anybody feel bad or anything, mm-hmm. but they get enthusiastic about this, and the kids get into this, students get into this, and it's one where, again, this is really about all academics,
mm-hmm.
and it's one of those few things that, you know, somebody is really cheering for something where someone read and then they would stand and deliver, if you will. And maybe that should be done more.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're talking about is so normal for, like, a basketball game or a football game, or to have people all come together and watch something, but doesn't really happen with your academics.
Not enough, at
least.
Not enough. Yeah.
Can I say something, yeah, Dr. Absolutely. Rose?
Yeah, absolutely.
Dr. Rose is being modest. The energy is electrifying at the competition. And being the MC, I just feed off of it. Uh-huh. What's really electrifying is watching the peers of the students cheer their team members on. Mm. That is just incredible.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Does it get spicy? Is there ever, you know, an answer that a judge accepts or doesn't accept and people, you know, get all up in arms and, you know, they're like, oh, that should be counted or.
No, actually, they're very supportive, okay, of all teams. In fact, mm-hmm, in some school districts, we do this during the day, mm-hmm, so that the students can come in from those various schools and they have their own built-in cheering section. Yes. It's really pretty
with signs.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Again, that Madison Metropolitan School District is competing tonight or this afternoon. And you can check that out. If you're just tuning in, my guests are Dr. Floyd Rose and Mr. Corby White, who are joining us from 100 Black Men, the Madison chapter. Have you seen this, like, you know, when January starts and students start to gather to learn, have you heard from maybe their advisors or their teachers that it changes something within the school or the sort of celebration of Black history during that time?
We receive information at the beginning of the year, school year, in September, October-ish, what is the book going to be?
Mm.
There's not a limit on this. This is something that we've had many successful coaches over the years, and they already have set a standard where their students expect to participate because they were either undergrads and watched someone else, or they had, you know, some kin or what have you. So it's one of those situations for those who actually know right away, they're asking questions right out of the chute of this. And again, I think a lot of it is for last year's team, they came, both teams, junior division, middle schools, and senior division, they came from Verona.
Mm.
And they were...
Where did they come from again?
Verona Area School District, I might add. And the trip that they had was to Las Vegas to compete at our national convention, which was held in Las Vegas. And that was, I think, pretty special for them. In fact, it's really interesting. Ollie, who is not here.
The host of this show regularly, yeah.
Yeah. She was our representative when she was at East High School, and she competed in Las Vegas. And I remember, as I recall, her, when she graduated, her sister was in this, and she did very well, and she represented the 100 Black Men of Madison. We have a statement called Mentoring for a Lifetime, which I think is exactly prevalent in many homes and in many situations where if we can help you at any point of your journey, we are expected to do that. And so it's not a one and done kind of thing. It's more along the lines of, if we can add value, we'll try to do that. And all we ask is that you will do the same for somebody else that comes along your way.
Yeah, you mentioned Ali, who is the host of the show, and she has a middle school age daughter. I don't know if she's quite in middle school yet. But so you're seeing legacies, right? You're seeing kids who are participating, whose parents potentially participated when they were in school.
Yeah, there's an expectation.
Yeah.
You know, and again, it's like anything else. If you had a satisfied customer, they usually will come back or find a way to see if they can utilize. And we applaud that. We don't run from that.
Do you, it looks like you had something you wanted to add to that.
Oh, just wanted to add to what Dr. Rose said. One of the things I've noticed as a board member of the Verona Area mm-hmm. Board of Education, with not just this program that we conduct with students, but some of our other programs, the Democracy Project, Dollars and Cents Competition, that students are asking us, how do I sign up? Mm. How do I become part of that? I have had students approach me from Verona. Is African-American Academic History Challenge, is that going on again? How do I become part of it? Or how do I become part of the stock market team? How do I do that? So especially over the past year, and maybe it's because Verona's been so successful at some of these competitions, I've been really seeing a lot of students interested in becoming part of a team for one of our various programs. And it's a thing of beauty to see that.
Yeah,
we have we were very blessed. We have for many years, and Corby's right, we have a lot of different programs. I'll just bring one, although it's not germane mm-hmm. to this conversation, but we have a junior investment program that students have become involved in, where they learn how to play the stock market. Mm. Last year, we have two amazing coaches, Manny Scarborough and Ernest Allen, and five students from Madison got involved in that. As a result, they compete for 13 weeks on playing the stock market against teams from all over. Mm. Must be almost 100 teams from all over, Long Beach, Phoenix, you name it. And they were one of the top five. They went to Las Vegas. They, in turn, had to make presentations. Their presentation was the best of all five. They were crowned national winners.
Wow.
And on the 27th of October, they were flown to New York, where they opened up the New York stock market.
Wow. I got like goosebumps as you were talking about it. I can see that being huge for those kids, but I also can imagine that being huge for the school community, mm-hmm. sort of believing that kids from this school can do national things.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a good point. That's some of the that's the beauty of working with 100 Black Men of America. Mm-hmm. You interface with kids from all over. Mm-hmm. If you can, you know, we bring you somewhere. And also you get a chance to compete against them, and you learn from them, they learn from you. It broadens the community perspective that we try hard to do this, to take them out of their neighborhood mm-hmm. so that they can see something that maybe they would not have seen.
Yeah, I have a question that it's not fully formed, so we'll see how it goes. but I wonder what the impact is of taking kids from, you know, the Madison area, which is fairly white. We're multicultural, but we're fairly white, and bringing them to a place where a lot of the people who are around them are, you know, excellent Black academics, Black students, Black teenagers, and what that sort of, maybe what walls that brings down for them.
In this situation, I know enough not to say too much, but I would just suggest to you that there is a great program mm-hmm. in you interviewing some of these young people that have gone to these various yeah. places. The group that went to New York, they created their own video, mm-hmm. which was quite interesting. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. but it said a whole lot because they were so enthusiastic. They wanted to capture it on tape, yeah. on video.
Yeah. Do you have anything to add to that, Corby, about that experience?
Just simply, I totally believe in our motto. And it's something that I say to kids all the time, that I say to educators all the time. And that is, what they see is what they'll be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, our engineer John tells me that we have a caller on the line. So caller, what is your question or comment?
I just want to thank the 100 Black Men. This is Ali Malta.
Hi, Ali.
Floyd Rose. If it wasn't for 100 Black Men, I wouldn't know that slavery ended in Vermont in 1777 or began, in 1444. I have learned so much from you, and I'm so proud of the work that you all do. And my daughter will be competing tonight at Doyle. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to remind folks to come support our young people in tonight's competition. But thank you so much for your work, and thanks for your really thoughtful call last week. And Jade, what a beautiful show. You're the best.
Hey, Ali, will you stay on for a second?
I would love to.
I just asked a question, which you were probably calling, so I don't know if you heard. But the question was the experience of being a young person who does really well in this competition and then has a chance to go nationally and compete with other you know, awesome Black teenagers. What was that experience like for you?
That was one of the greatest experiences of my life. I took fifth in the nation when I was 16 years old. We went to Vegas. Sarah Elmore was our teacher. And it was one of the most intellectually affirming experiences I had ever had up to that point. It was one of the most relevant educational experiences. And it was kind of like I had spent my whole life experiencing racism, and 100 Black Men and reading They Came Before the Mayflower connected the dots between history and the experience I was having in Madison as a young person. Mm. It was really, really powerful. It meant a lot to me. It was also the first time I had ever been on a plane.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, Ali, thank you for this show and all that you do here. And I hope that your kid does really good tonight. I'm not, you know, not favoritism, but we hope that she wins.
Thank you. I'm rooting for O'Keefe as well. I'll see you tonight. Thanks so much for what you do, 100 Black Men, and particularly you, Dr. Floyd Rose.
Thanks, Ali.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Floyd Rose, would you like to, do you have experiences like that, you know, adults coming up to you and saying, when I was a teenager, your influence was really impactful?
I would say not that much, but what I guess the really essence of this is that we were able to work with someone at the right time, like Ali Mudro, and the things that she has done for others is just remarkable. And you can ask for anything better than that. That's what sustains our community. To help someone who can do anything do some of those things at an early age so they can really see something broader than the perspective that they're in. And to see someone like Ali who then just passes it on, that's exactly what this is all about. It's not about someone just usurping something and then they have it. It's about literally having something that grows and they hand it off and then it grows and then they hand it off to someone else and it grows. And so that's really the award in this, to know that there's a better community because of the young people that you were able to not necessarily formulate, but to help them formulate what they wanted to do and what they could do and give them that confidence, because that's all they need sometimes. We think that everything is very positive and that everybody's on everybody's side. A lot of children wonder sometimes if there's anybody out there. Mm-hmm. You know, is there anybody that believes in me that's not family? You know, and if you can convey that, it just brings about such a different attitude about I can rather than I don't know. Mm. And Ali is one of those that we what little we put in, she took it and she's done amazing things. To be the president of the school board where she went to school, that's pretty good. Yeah. That's a good day. And so we just want to pass it on and to really allow all these children get to know the best of themselves, and then also allow the public to see the best of themselves, so that we all can eventually understand the best of one another.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about, I think, really the basics of a healthy community, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's not any one of us, but
That's right.
Care that we collectively put in.
Yeah.
Corby, you are on the school board in Verona.
Yes.
And so this question is a little bit about 100 Black Men, but also about your involvement. Why is it important for students to see that, you know, 100 Black men in Madison, are invested in how their education is and how they are able to succeed within the school system that we have?
Absolutely. Great question. And Dr. Rose pretty much touched on that a second ago. It is so important for kids to know that someone is available, someone's there, someone's interested, someone wants to see them succeed. Someone has an expectation for them to succeed. They in turn have the expectation to succeed. I was just a week ago talking with a group of students at Verona, and one of them said something, and I called Dr. Rose right after this. So this isn't made up. Dr. Rose remembers this. I said, this kid said something that was so poignant, but I couldn't believe it. It was so simple. He said, I just want someone to tell me I can do it. I just want that voice. That's all I need. Because he's a kid who has a lot on his plate, who's basically financially supporting his household and going to school, to high school. And he said, I just need someone who looks like me to tell me I can. And I called Dr. Rose right away after that and said, you know, we have to stay involved the way we are as mentors. Because our presence alone, just being there, has life-lasting impact.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's so true. There are many situations where the reported is that this young person did this wrong or this young person did that wrong, but nobody really reports on the children. In many cases, there's a book called Man, Child, and the Promised Land where a young person had to become an adult to take care of their siblings at the age, a teenage.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of children in our community that are doing just that, holding down jobs and school so that their family will have adequate income.
Mm.
It's just amazing what's really happening sometimes. And we see what glitters with certain press situations, but the real story is the one that's untold.
Yeah. I think that is a really beautiful place to leave it. That was Dr. Floyd Rose, who's the president of the Madison chapter of 100 Black Men. Also joining us today was Mr. Corby White, who is a board member of 100 Black Men in Madison. 100 Black Men, yeah, of Madison, and is the chair of the Health and Wellness Committee and also does a lot in our community. I want to thank you both for making the time to come down to the studio today.
Thank you for having us.
I also want to thank our engineer, John Lang, and receptionist, Steve Gordon. As always, thanks to our news director, Shali Pittman. I've been your host, Jade Isiri Ramos, and you're listening to A Public Affair on WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
The Wall Street Morning Afternoon Edition, commandeering airwaves from unknown positions. Live and direct, becoming never pre-recorded, with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and supported. Live and direct, becoming never pre-recorded, with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted.
This is Pacifica Radio's Letters on Politics. On today's show,
the Nakba, of course, is an ongoing event because the Palestinians have never been able to come back. What is happening now in Gaza is, as many people would say, a second Nakba. It is still happening. And the Holocaust, although as an event it ended, it remained deeply ingrained in how Israelis understand themselves, partly because of family memories, collective memories, and partly because the Israeli state, certainly since the 1980s, has made the Holocaust into an instrument of politics.
A conversation on how the European Holocaust led to the Palestinian Nakba and its ramifications. Our guest is Omer Bartov. He is a professor of Holocaust and Genocide Studies at Brown University and author of the book Genocide, the Holocaust, and Israel-Palestine. That's next on Letters on Politics. But first, the news.
BBC News with Sue Montgomery. The U.S. State Department says it expects a transitional council in Haiti to be appointed within the next 48 hours. Once established, it will nominate a new prime minister to succeed Ariel Henry, who announced his plans to resign on Monday. His departure had been a demand of the gangs, which control much of Haiti, but they're maintaining their blockade of the capital, Port-au-Prince. The BBC's Vanessa Buschlutter explains how members of the council will be chosen.
It will be composed of 9 people, 7 voting members and 2 members that will just advise. And they want a broad spread of people represented on this council. None of the people who are on the council can have been indicted, charged, or been to prison. Now, that already rules out quite a few people in Haiti who are currently vying for power. And there's also a number of people who are under UN sanctions, and those also cannot be at the table for this transitional council.
The US special counsel, who released a scathing report last month, has said he stands by his characterization of President Biden's memory as poor. Giving evidence to a congressional hearing, Robert Hur said Mr. Biden appeared